Although they had but that moment left the school behind them, they were now in the busy thoroughfares of a city. It was made plain enough by the dressing of the shops that here too it was Christmas time again. But it was evening, and the streets were lighted up. The ghost stopped at a certain warehouse door and asked Scrooge if he knew it.
Know it? I was apprenticed here.
They went in. At the sight of an old gentleman in a Welsh wig sitting behind such a high desk that if he had been 2 inches taller he must have knocked his head against the ceiling, Scrooge cried in great excitement.
Why, it's a Fezziwig! Bless his heart, it's Fezziwig alive again!
Old Fezziwig laid down his pen and looked up at the clock, which pointed to the hour of 7. He rubbed his hands, adjusted his capacious waistcoat, laughed all over himself from his shoes to his organ of benevolence, and called out in a comfortable, rich, fat, jovial voice,
Ho, 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 there! Ebenezer! Dick!
Scrooge's former self, now grown a young man, came briskly in, accompanied by his fellow prentice.
Dick Wilkins, to be sure, said Scrooge to the ghost. Bless me, yes, there he is. He was very much attached to me, was Dick. Poor Dick, dear, dear.
You, ho, ho, my boys, no more work tonight. Christmas Eve, Dick. Christmas, Ebenezer! Let's have the shutters up! Cried old Fezziwig, with a sharp clap of his hands, before a man can say, Jack Robinson!
You wouldn't believe how those two fellows went at it. They charged into the street with the shutters and came back before you could have got to 12, panting like racehorses.
Hilly-ho! Cried old Fezziwig, skipping down from the high desk. Clear away, my lads, and let's have lots of room here. Hilly-ho, Dick! Cheer up, Ebenezer!
Clear away? It was done in a minute. Every movable was packed off, the floor was swept and watered, the lamps were trimmed, fuel was heaped upon the fire, and the warehouse was as snug and warm and dry and bright a ballroom as you could desire to see upon a winter's night. In came a fiddler with a music-book, and went up to the lofty desk, and made an orchestra of it, and tuned like 50 stomach-aches. In came Mrs. Fezziwig, one vast, substantial smile. In came the 3 Miss Fezziwigs, beaming and lovable. In came the 6 young followers whose hearts they broke. In came all the young men and women employed in the business. In came the housemaid with her cousin, the baker. In came the cook with her brother's particular friend, the milkman. In came the boy from over the way, who was suspected of not having bored enough from his master, trying to hide himself behind the girl from next door but one, who was proved to have had her ears pulled by her mistress. In they all came anyhow and everyhow. Away they all went, 20 couple at once. Down the middle and up again, round and round. Old top couple always turning up in the wrong place, new top couple starting off again as soon as they got there. All top couples at last, and not a bottom one to help them. There were more dances, and there were forfeits, and more dances. And there was cake, and there was a great piece of cold roast, and there was a great piece of cold boiled, and there were mince pies and plenty of beer. But the great effect of the evening came after the roast and boiled, when the fiddler struck up Sir Roger de Coverley. Then old Fezziwig stood out to dance with Mrs. Fezziwig. Top couple too, with a good stiff piece of work cut out for them, 3 or 4 and 20 pair of partners, people who were not to be trifled with, people who would dance and had no notion of walking. But if they had been twice as many, well, 4 times, old Fezziwig would have been a match for them, and so would Mrs. Fezziwig. As to her, she was worthy to be his partner in every sense of the term. If that's not high praise, tell me higher and I'll use it. A positive light appeared to issue from Fezziwig's calves. They shone in every part of the dance like moons. And when old Fezziwig and Mrs. Fezziwig had gone all through the dance, Fezziwig cut so deftly that he appeared to wink with his legs and came upon his feet again without a stagger. When the clock struck 11, this domestic ball broke up. Mr. and Mrs. Fezziwig talked to their stations, one on either side of the door, shaking hands with every person individually as he or she went out, wished him or her a Merry Christmas. When everybody had retired but the two prentices, they did the same to them. And thus the cheerful voices died away, and the lads were left to their beds, which were under a counter in the back shop. During the whole of this time, Scrooge had acted like a man out of his wits. His heart and soul were in the scene and with his former self. It was not until now, when the bright faces of his former self and Dick were turned from them, that he remembered the ghost, and became conscious that it was looking full upon him, while the light upon its head burnt very clear. A small matter to make these silly folks so full of gratitude.
Small?
Why is it not? He has spent but a few pounds of your mortal money. 3 or 4, perhaps. Is that so much that he deserves this praise?
It isn't that, Spirit. He has the power to render us happy or unhappy, to make our service light or burdensome, a pleasure or a toil. His power lies in words and looks, in things so slight and insignificant that it is impossible to add and count them up. What, then? The happiness he gives is quite as great as if it cost a fortune.
He felt the Spirit's glance and stopped. What is the matter?
Nothing in particular.
Something, I think.
No. No. I should like to be able to say a word or two to my clerk just now, that's all.
My time grows short. Quick. For again, Scrooge saw himself. He was older now. His face had not the harsh and rigid lines of later years, but it had begun to wear the signs of care and avarice. There was an eager, greedy, restless motion in the eye, which showed the passion that had taken root and where the shadow of the growing tree would fall. He was not alone, but sat by the side of a fair young girl in whose eyes there were tears.
"It matters little,"
she said softly,
"to you very little. Another idol has displaced me, and if it can cheer and comfort you in time to come, as I would have tried to do, I have no just cause to grieve."
"What idol has displaced you?"
"A golden one."
"This is the even-handed dealing of the world," he said. "There is nothing on which it is so hard as poverty, and there is nothing it professes to condemn with such severity as the pursuit of wealth. You fear the world too much. All your other hopes have merged into the hope of being beyond the chance of its sordid reproach. I have seen your nobler aspirations fall off one by one until the master passion, gain, engrosses you."
"What then?"
he retorted. "Even if I have grown so much wiser, what then? I am not changed towards you." She shook her head.
"Our contract is an old one. It was made when we were both poor and content to be so until in good season we could improve our worldly fortune by our patient industry. You are changed. When it was made, you were another man."
"I was a boy."
"Your own feeling tells you that you were not what you are,"
she returned.
"I am. If you were free today, can even I believe that you would choose a dowerless girl? You, who in your very confidence with her weigh everything by gain, or choosing her, if for a moment you were false enough to your one guiding principle to do so, do I not know that your repentance and regret would surely follow? I do. And I release you. You may, the memory of what is past, half makes me hope you will, have pain in this. A very, very brief time, and you will dismiss the recollection of it as an unprofitable dream from which it happened well that you awoke.
May you be happy in the life you have chosen. She left him, and they parted.
Spirit, show me no more. Conduct me home, while you delight to torture me.
One shadow more. They were in another scene and place, a room, not very large or handsome, but full of comfort. Near to the winter fire sat a beautiful young girl, so like that last that Scrooge believed it was the same, until he saw her, now a comely matron, sitting opposite her daughter. The noise in this room was perfectly tumultuous, for there were more children there than Scrooge, in his agitated state of mind, could count, and the consequences were uproarious, but no one seemed to care. On the contrary, the mother and daughter laughed heartily and enjoyed it very much. But now a knocking at the door was heard, and such a rush immediately ensued to greet the father, who came home attended by a man laden with Christmas toys and presents. Then the shouting and the struggling and the onslaught that was made on the defenseless porter, the joy, the gratitude and ecstasy. "Bell," said the husband, "I saw an old friend of yours this afternoon."
"Who was it?"
"Guess."
"Oh, how can I?
Don't I know?
Mr. Scrooge."
"Mr. Scrooge it was. I passed his office window, and as it was not shut up, and he had a candle inside, I could scarcely help seeing him. His partner lies upon the point of death, I hear, and there he sat alone, quite alone in the world, I do believe."
"Spirit, remove me from this place."
"I told you these were shadows of the things that have been. That they are what they are. Do not blame me."
"Remove me. I cannot bear it."
He turned upon the ghost, and observing that its light was burning high and bright, he seized the extinguisher cap, and by a sudden action pressed it down upon its head. The spirit dropped beneath it, so that the extinguisher covered its whole form, but though Scrooge pressed it down with all his force, he could not hide the light which streamed from under it in an unbroken flood upon the ground. He was conscious of being exhausted and overcome by an irresistible drowsiness, and further, of being in his own bedroom. He gave the cap a parting squeeze, in which his hand relaxed, and had barely time to reel to bed before he sank into a heavy sleep.